Amazing Grace. We heard Robert Bonfilio performing live here in the studios of KRWG, and he'll be the solo artist with the Las Cruces Symphony this weekend in a pair of concerts Saturday night at 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and he is joining me here in the studios with conductor Lonnie Klein. Welcome to you both.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Robert Bonfilio, you're not unique in the classical music world, but you are a rarity of harmonica virtuoso. There are a number of pieces, I learned about some looking at your website, written for harmonica and orchestra. But it's a common instrument that we all had our little harmonica when we were kids. But what made you choose to go this very untrodden path of being I know you do more than just classical, but you also do classical harmonica.
Well, I started out as, I got a harmonica in my Christmas stocking when I was like 5 years old. And, like all kids, you learn how to play a few things on the instrument. And then by the time I was in high school, I had a blues band. My favorite players were people like Sonny Boy Williamson, Junior Wells, James Cotton. We used to play stuff like
Well, right, that's James Cotton and blues, Delta blues. That's what we associate with the harmonica, but you chose a very different path.
And then I decided in my backyard in Iowa to be a harmonica player, to get more serious about it, and I went to New York City to study. They didn't have a harmonica major, but I studied composition. Eventually, I got my master's from Manhattan School of Music, and I studied composition. I won the first MIO scholarship to study with Aaron Copland at Aspen. So I studied with Copland and Wernin. Then after that, I was playing every kind of cat food and dog food commercial you could possibly imagine in the studios in New York City. And along came Tina Turner, and she had a song called What's Love Got to Do With It? And it had a DX7 synthesizer playing the harmonica lick on it. And the very next day, we lost our gig in the studio. It was gone.
Oh,
to the machines. And fortunately for me, in 86, I did the world premiere of the Henry Cowell Harmonica Concerto with Lucas Foss and the Brooklyn Philharmonic. And then I did the Midwest premiere with the Milwaukee Symphony and eventually the West Coast premiere with the Los Angeles Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl. And ever since then, I've played harmonica concerti for a living. Hmm. This particular one...
Yes, you'll be performing the Concerto for Harmonica and Orchestra by Hector Villa-Lobos.
Yeah, Villa-Lobos wrote this for John Sebastian, who was the father, by the way, of the John Sebastian Jr. Mm-hmm. in The Lovin' Spoonful.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that wrote, What a Day for a Daydream
And also had a solo career as a singer-songwriter.
Oh, yes, no, and friends, too. It actually was very interesting because I played the concerto with the Albany Symphony, and the very next day I run a music festival out at the Grand Canyon, and we went out, and I was rehearsing with John Jr. to play a different, that jug band music that he plays. And it's so laid back, and I had to use the other side of my brain, But John Jr. is a wonderful harmonica player, diatonic harmonica player in his own right, so...
Tell us the difference between these different kinds of harmonicas.
Well, the one I'm going to play, a chromatic harmonica, is the one that you'll play. You'll hear me play the concerto with.
And I let me just describe for our listeners. This is considerably larger than the
yes.
small harmonicas that we got as gifts when we were kids. This is.
It's four octaves. So it goes way the heck up.
Yeah.
At the same time, it has a button on the end, which gives you chromaticisms. And it makes it possible for you to play fairly difficult chromatic material. I'll play a little bit from the Villa-Lobos Harmonica Concerto Second Movement.
Thank you. Music of Hector Villa-Lobos that will be on the program tomorrow night and Sunday afternoon. Robert Bonfilio is my guest. Lonnie Klein is here also. He'll be conducting the concerto. Beautiful. And
thank you.
So this is it's about the size of a good-sized chocolate bar, I would say.
So this is a chromatic harmonica. And basically, if you play it without the button in, it plays a C scale. But if you put the button in, it goes up to D flat, one half step. Makes it possible to play. In every key, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the, you know, nice. And it still does the stuff that I learned from the mailman. You can still play the. You can still play the oom-pah-pah music with it.
You can. I can't.
But it requires, actually, it's kind of interesting. It requires a lot of dexterity in your tongue.
Huh. That's where a lot of the action is going.
Yes. Yeah. So it makes it possible to, you know, you can play two notes out of one side of the mouth and play two notes out of the other side.
Huh.
And
amazing.
Even hold the tongue on the instrument and tongue out of both sides of the mouth with the tongue on the instrument. The side of the tongue comes up and does this. Because the tongue, unlike a lot of other muscles, is capable, it's very strong muscle, it's capable of doing so much stuff. You can speak Chinese and finish with it probably too.
So you've played, I know, this concerto by Villa-Lobos in 350 times or something, hundreds of times.
It's more than that now. It's about 420, I think, now. So, yes, I've played it all over the world in all the major halls, from the Gewandhaus in Leipzig to Teatro Colón in Buenos Aires, Kennedy Center, Carnegie Hall, Avery Fisher Hall, the Grand Hall in Switzerland.
So is it new every time you play it?
Yeah, it's a great piece. I mean, it's the thing about playing a piece of classical music versus, you know, having to sing Achy Breaky Heart 300 times in a year is that there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, and it's never the same. Mm-hmm. I'm with a different orchestra, a different conductor a lot of times, and it makes it, even with the same conductor, how the flutist plays the solo before you and you're supposed to echo, that night maybe it's different. And then you play differently. And then the rest of everybody starts to play. It's like a conversation and you don't know where it's going to go or how it's going to go.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about classical music. I mean, we distort things. That's how we get the emotion. The difference between playing blues, you know, if you have a good drummer in blues, they'll keep the same rhythm the whole way through the song. In classical music, we take time and distort, we slow things down, we speed them up, even within phrases. And we use different kinds of tonal colors. They do that in blues as well. But you're not likely to hear a wah-wah in classical music, you know. You know, this kind of stuff. And you're also not likely to hear a pizzicato passage in a blues, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk for a minute, and then I want to bring you in, Lonnie, too. I've been sitting here very patiently. But I'm just curious about your composing work. You studied with two great American composers, Wuorinen and Aaron Copland, and just, are you still composing? Do you compose for?
Not really. You know, The problem with composition is that you have to spend the morning composing music. And then you have to spend the afternoon promoting it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't leave much time to practice 3 or 4 hours a day or prepare a new concerto and so on and so forth. I find, you know, in retrospect, I used the composition as a way to get through music school and in order to be able to play the harmonica.
Uh-huh. since there was no harmonica major.
It was, you know, and afterwards I actually got, I was coached by the first flute of the New York City Ballet for 12 years on all the major works for harmonica and orchestra. So when I played with John Williams and the Boston Pops, the concertmaster came up to me. She said, "Where did you learn how to phrase like that?" And I said, "Well, coached for 12 years with the principal flute of the New York City Ballet." She said, "Ah, I knew it was something." So it is a work, you know, in progress that never ends. And that's what makes it so possible, going back to you playing the same piece over and over, is that I am constantly working on my technique and on, and it just never ends. If you could do it perfectly, you know, you'd stop because it'd be boring, like driving a car to work, you know. Everybody can do that.
No, that's why I asked, is it always new? Because for most musicians, you have to make it new. Otherwise, it does sort of get stale, and, you know, you have to continue to plumb the depths of a piece.
Yeah, and the other, well, for me also, because I play the harmonica, it brings me back to childhood. I mean, they call it playing music. They don't call it working music. When it becomes work, I'm not doing it anymore. You know, I started playing this as a kid, and I'm going to keep playing it until I can, you know, until it becomes work.
So what I said that to my kids when they were growing up. I said, always said that. It's playing, not work. Lonnie Klein, what's it like for you to be conducting a harmonica concerto?
Well, it's been a real education for me. It's very fascinating. I mean, I listen to the Villalobos, of course, but just watching the technique involved and... Obviously, Robert's very musical. It's a beautiful piece. It's not long. It's only about 24 minutes, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not a long concerto, and it's almost seamless. But it's very, very, as you heard the second movement, it's very beautiful. And orchestrated well. It's interesting. It doesn't sound, you know, Brazilian. It sounds like a 19th century romantic concerto.
Well, it has, Villa-Lobos is an interesting composer because he has his own voice, and yet it's not... You know, just pure dissonance. Yeah. It actually is a 20th century composition, but one that has great, gorgeous melodies in it. And it only he, very few other composers really.
Yeah, and the orchestration's interesting. It's flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, two horns, and trombone. Huh. And then strings.
Well, he was largely self-taught, so he wasn't, as I recall, so he wasn't locked into some of the academic approach to music in his day. Plus, he was Brazilian.
So if I can tell a little story, John Sebastian told me when his father was getting this concerto. This is John Jr. now, the Love and Spoonful.
Yes, we got it.
He was just a kid. And they go to Villa-Lobos' office in New York City. And John Sr. says, "Open one of the drawers in the desk." Inside there, full of Cuban cigars. And then the next one is full of Cuban cigars. And all the drawers were full of Cuban cigars. And Villa-Lobos gets his phone call. And he runs into the other room. You know, he says, "What do you mean you can't play this?" And he runs into the other room, comes back with a guitar, tunes it up, and he just, but he plays this passage. And he says, "See, Andre, I told you that you could play this piece." And so he was talking to Segovia on the phone, you know. And so John Jr. told me that story.
That's a great story. And sometimes composers didn't, you know, the players did have to tell them this is unplayable, and they would sometimes change it. You know, they were famous.
Oh, I have a great story. You know, we commissioned Joan Tower to write a piece for the orchestra years ago. This is five or six years ago. She's a wonderful composer. And she'd written the trumpet, a high C for 16 bars. I said, "Joan, we can't do that."
Well, you could if you gave him a six pack, I think, maybe.
Yeah. So we ended up reorchestrating and putting the piccolo, which makes it a lot. Still, the color is not quite the same, but it's close, and certainly you can play that because the piccolo sounds up an octave.
Yeah. From what I understand, wasn't this? I mean, when Verdi wrote all those pieces, Toscanini would say, "Well, actually, what you really want in the orchestration is this," and they would change it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that when you write these concertos, you know, you're always in constant you know, communication with the soloist, knowing what's possible. Sometimes they come up with things that are even more interesting once you start down a path. And sometimes they tell you, yeah, unless I want to break my teeth out, you know, I can't play that passage.
I'm just curious, what happens? Does a harmonica wear out? Do you have to have it adjusted or fixed? Like, what? Like, do you ever have to send your harmonica to the shop like a violinist does?
Well, yeah, they have brass reeds inside, and when you hear them go, I mean, it's kind of interesting. They just kind of go like this, and they break, you know, like strings, you know, from metal fatigue. And then you can either have the reed replaced or get basically another instrument, buy another harmonica. And generally, if one reed is going, I will get another harmonica, because another one will break if you replace the one that you did.
Yeah.
So it happens. I've had them only one time. I was playing the Vaughan Williams Romance, and I broke a reed on the harmonica, and I had to go off stage and get another harmonica. And they looked at me, and I said, well, it's the concert master didn't bring his harmonica today, so I couldn't take his, which is what violinists do.
Yes, indeed.
And they grab.
They grab the concert masters. Well, I was impressed to see on your website how many concertos there actually are out there on Rhapsodies. Joaquin Rodrigo, Darius Milhaud, we mentioned earlier, Vaughan Williams, Cherepnin. You've actually got pretty significant repertoire of classical works, and I know you've commissioned some.
Yeah, there are about 60 concerti for harmonic and orchestra, but the 12 or so are the major composers that would be requested.
Yeah.
You know.
So how come there aren't more classical harmonica players out there?
Generally, on any given instrument at any given time, there is going to be one soloist who predominantly gets most of the work, or nearly all of it. So if you play cello and your name isn't Yo-Yo Ma, you might be in trouble, kind of stuff. You know. Now that is changing now because of the dire straits that these European orchestras are in because of austerity and stuff over there.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, but on the other hand, you know, most of the community orchestras, surprises me, you know, in the United States, are doing quite well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. There's such a need for people to have something more in depth for emotion than what we're exposed to, you know.
Yeah. I guess my question is, do you see ever there being a department of harmonica in a conservatory, or is there a rising interest, a growing interest?
Well, it's a possibility. I mean, especially among, I've judged harmonica contests in Asia where you might have 2,500 harmonica players at the place and 100 of them playing movements from concertos. It's possible, but I'm not so sure whether that's a good thing or not. It's kind of nice to be an outlaw because then you actually work. When you play classical guitar, we'd mentioned Segovia, I mean, then they start departments of classical guitar all over the place, and everybody plays, and they all play all the stuff, and nobody has any work, you know.
Yeah.
So you end up teaching, Isabel.
Well, it's been fascinating. I wish we had more time. My guest has been Robert Ponfilio and Lonnie Klein. Just quickly, Lonnie, there's also music of Bartok on the other
side. Right. I call this my two-for-one concert. So you're getting two concertos, actually. Uh-huh. So we're doing the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra.
You want to just talk about it for a minute?
Sure.
Before we go off?
It's five movements. It really is a concerto for orchestra. Every section in the orchestra has a solo part. Flutes, oboes, clarinets, bassoon, horns, trumpets, strings. It's an enormously difficult piece. The most challenging work we will have done this year, and we've done the Sibelius, you know, and the Kalinikov. But it's rewarding. It's rewarding, and a fabulous composer. The last thing that he wrote is a composer, and it was commissioned by Koussevitzky. It was actually written in 1943, and he was dying, actually. Bartok was dying, and he got the commission from the Boston Symphony to write this work, and it's fabulous. And we're also doing the Chabrier. I added that. Chabrier's España.
Oh.
I thought that would be a good pairing with the Villa-Lobos. So it's going to be a fabulous concert, and really looking forward to working with Robert. And
this is going to be a great concert to bring your kids to, you know, because the harmonica is not intimidating, and it's a wonderful, you know, family get exposure. If you haven't been to hear a symphony, and if I get a little bit of applause, you know, I might play a
Thank you. Great way to end the interview. Robert Bonfiglio, Saturday night at 7:30, Sunday at 3. Lonnie Klein will be conducting the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. Thanks so much to both of you for coming in. Thanks for the performances.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Leora.